on your part.
Welcome to the On Track and Field podcast. I'm your host, JT Ayers. All things track and field related, you know what you got to do. Go to ontrackandfield.com. They have what you need to support your athletes to get them where they need to go. And that is the personal best and PRs and meet management so you can fundraise. Go fundraise. Buy cool things like Gill Fusion blocks, a pole vault pole, a pole vault pit. How about a discus or a shot put? Even cones. Yes, little cones. Go to ontrackandfield.com. With me right now is Rebecca Mira. I've been watching her compete and race from all distance. I know she's a great cross country runner, but now she's a professional 1500 meter and 800 meter. And I know she can go further. middle distance track athlete. I was actually just met her a couple weeks ago at the World Championships in Eugene. And I asked her, you got to do this podcast. And she was like, let's do it. And so this is really neat because not only was she successful in high school, but then she never stopped getting better. She was at Stanford where she studied international relations. That's where she got her bachelor's. And then she eked out, in her words, a fifth year communications master's, all the while becoming a three-time All-American at an extremely hard academic, but world-renowned kind of great distance program. And then she went and she became an incredible ambassador for the sport. I actually watched her spend hours at this meet and greet where this huge line of people were trying to meet her and she stayed there the whole time. So personal best in the 800 of 2:82, which rivals every great, you're humbling a lot of guys that run the 800 right now. And then a 1500 at 4:04:90. It's so great to have you on the podcast. Thank you for joining me.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me on. And thank you for the wonderfully complimentary intro.
Well, it's easy when you get to go on Wikipedia and just see what you do. So without skipping a beat, there's something that has been really like relevant when you do any research on you and I talk to you, and that's your support system. And this is something that I think not a lot of people have, and you hear the horror stories of. But how did you find and create a support system that has lasted you this long and continues to help you with your success?
Yeah. I mean, I've been very, very lucky to have a supportive family from the get-go. They knew absolutely nothing about track and field, not very much about sports from the get-go, but they always show up to all my big meets. My dad in particular has held the watch for me at quite a few workouts. And then I knew how important it was to have a really great coach and really great teammates. And so over the years, especially as I became a pro, like I always looked for that, like someone who would be collaborative with me, someone who I really got along with, and someone who like also fostered a really great environment with like a health first approach. And that was really great in Lauren Fleshman, who was my coach for 3 years, and equally great with Sarah Lesko and her husband, Bob, that coach me now. So that's been wildly important. And then having good teammates, people who you can work with, you don't always get to choose your team, but as a pro, you get to do a little bit more of that. And that's been wonderful as well to surround myself with such like great supportive people, and you lift each other up. So it's been my
experience. Was that something you were looking for when you went to Stanford? I know you were coming from a great coaching environment at Palos Verdes. Mm-hmm. And so when you were looking at all the colleges to go to, what made Stanford stand out?
Couple of things. I knew I wanted the combination of like athletics and challenging academics. I'd actually looked only at schools primarily on the East Coast. And then of course I found myself like staying in California. A big thing for me was meeting the team, going on my official visit, meeting the other athletes. My host was wonderful. And I mean, those athletes became my best friends and still are some of my best friends. Like now I'm in all of their weddings in the next like year or so. So that was really, really important. You want to foster an environment or enter into an environment that kind of feels like home. And that's how Stanford felt to me when I visited.
So moving on from Stanford, how does somebody become pro? Like, why was that something? And I mean this with 100% respect, but I know you work politically. I know that you're an advocate for a lot of different, like, in fact, as soon as you're done becoming a pro, I know you're going to be changing the world in some way. It just seems that's in your DNA. So like, why become pro? Like, how'd you know that was something that you should do? And was it an easy transition? I mean, what does that look like for a track and field athlete?
Yeah, it's really murky, right? Like not a whole lot of people understand like the process of becoming like a quote professional runner. I didn't think I was going to be a pro runner. I spent so much of college hurt that I lined up a job. Like I had a full-time job at a venture capital firm when I graduated. I was going to like work and like run on the side. And then I had this great last season. And I thought to myself like, oh, actually I do want to keep running. I was surrounded by so many fabulous athletes at Stanford that their processes were very different than mine. A lot of times athletes right out of college, depending on, you know, how good they are, how many NCAA titles they have, will sign an agent. And then that agent helps them facilitate conversations with coaches around the country and different teams. And of course, with sponsorships, sometimes those sponsorships are tied to coaches and sometimes they're not. So I didn't do that. I did not sign an agent. I actually like kept racing through the summer after I graduated from college. And I had met another athlete who said, hey, you should send an email and reach out to Wazelle. And I didn't think I was really good enough to be sponsored. And I thought, you know, what the heck, I'll give it a shot. And so I sent Wazelle a whole long email and I got like a great response. And yeah, the rest has been history. And I've kind of grown with them over the last like 5 years, which is a little wild. But yeah, I didn't actually sign an agent until a few years ago. So typically an agent helps you negotiate a contract and also helps you get into various competitions. So yeah, that's my story.
Yeah. And you have to travel all the time. Like I know you and I were just talking right before we did this podcast about you're going to North Carolina, right? I mean, that's other side of the country. And so, yeah. So how do you get used to traveling from, you know, on a plane, especially a distance runner who's now you're going to be sitting around for hours in an airplane. How do you get used to that? How, what do you do? You doing like dynamic stretching down the aisle before the drink cart comes?
To be honest, various coping mechanisms I've come up with over the years. And to be honest, flying to North Carolina is not even that bad. Like it's a 5-hour flight. I go travel to Europe often and I race, and that is like a whole other can of worms and new language and totally new food and like a massive time change. So East Coast is not so bad, but I try to always get aisle seats on the airplane if I can help it. Sometimes I end up booking things last minute and I'm in the middle and it is what it is.
And you have to book it. You're the one that goes and figures this out. You figure out travel plans.
Yeah. Again, going back to the agent thing, for some athletes, agents book their travel. For me, I like having the ability to do it myself, just so I can pick the time. And I don't mind organizing logistics. Actually, I kind of like it. I used to do it a lot for my little wing team as well. Like if we were going to a team camp, like I would help book the Airbnb or the flights or whatever. So I don't mind, but yeah, aisle seats are really great. Just trying to be like consistent about like having good meals, trying to sleep. Sleep's a big one. I know it's really hard when you're in a new time zone to like get yourself to go to sleep, but you just have to like count sheep, watch like a boring TV show, read a book, something to kind of get you to go to sleep. That's really important. And then also just, you know, you train for these races all year and you put in all the time and the effort. And for me, that's like even more motivation to like do all the little things just right. I don't know. What are some other big ones? Ice baths. If I can find one or hack it, sometimes I bring Normatec boots with me, foam roll. I don't know. You put in all the work ahead of time. So all you can really do when you travel is screw it up. So just try not to screw it up.
Okay. Hey, listener, as you're listening to Rebecca talk, obviously there's not a lot of things that can get her down. She deals with ups and downs. She even mentioned just in passing that she was hurt a lot during college. And I know you're dealing with an injury now because you and I were talking about the physical therapy you do. How important is it to, I mean, the physical therapist, the massages, the, all this stuff, is that something you have to manage yourself or your coach is pretty involved in all that?
I usually make the appointments myself. I had to take some time. Like I recently moved to Seattle, like in the last year, and I had to find a new physical therapist, a new massage therapist, but I try to stay pretty on top of it. I'm really, really injury prone. And I've learned over the years, having a really good physical therapist, especially that like knows me and knows my body and can help anticipate problems, is like super, super important. So I communicate with my coaches about it, but like, I usually make the appointments on my own. Yes, I'm unfortunately very injury prone. I've had a lot of injuries over time. I've unfortunately had kind of a tough year this year, with a couple of, you know, this is like the third little injury, I guess, I've had pop up, but I had two like relatively major ones this year and COVID. So I do my best to be positive, but it has been tough, but it's, you know, it's all part of the sport, the ups and downs. And you learn that after I'm aging myself, but like over a decade in the sport is what it is.
Yeah. What advice do you have for people that are injury prone? I mean, I obviously do everything you can to not stay in, you know, not get injured, but everyone has this disposition to have something, you know, that kid has a hip pointer, that kid has shin splints, that kid has an IT band issue. I know mechanics has something to do with it, but I mean, you're a professional athlete. You're always working on those things. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they still happen. They happen to the best in the world, like you, and they happen to the freshman that just joined a high school team. So what advice do you have, especially someone that's been dealing with it for, you know, I mean, it's kind of the ups and downs, but for a long time. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, a lot of different things. I mean, injury prevention wise, like the biggest things you could do are like sleep and eat properly, like fueling after workouts. That's like so, so important. And another big one that I was never any good at until I was a pro was running really easy on your easy days, like letting your body actually recover. Like I run slower now on my easy days as a pro than I did when I was in high school. Like 14-year-old Rebecca ran faster than 27-year-old Rebecca on the day to day. So that's a big one. But yeah, I mean, injuries are part of it. It can be so frustrating. Something I started doing when I was in college was keeping an injury journal. I feel like that can be really helpful and cathartic to just like go through the process of, you know, writing down your improvement and good things every day. And then also being able to look back on it if you're having a bad day, like post-injury, or if you're kind of frustrated about a performance, being able to look back and have some like, you know, be grateful about the fact that you've come so far. So I think that's really big. But also like giving yourself space to think about and do something else. For me, that was huge in college. Cause if I was just like trying to only think about cross training and PT every day and going to practice, like it's great to support your teammates, 100% need to do that, but also give yourself space to heal and focus on something else if you can.
You're also going to be a coach. Like this is something that you and I talked, you know, and reminisced and laughed about. Explain, like, is that something that your future is going to look like? I know you still have lots of good racing in you, but is that something that you're like thinking, hey, this might be something I do. I mean, you're also talking venture capital firms like that. There's a difference there.
Very different. I don't know that I'm going to be in that world anymore. I mean, I am always been interested in maybe going to law school, and I am interested in kind of the nonprofit world and nonprofit work. Like I work with Bras for Girls, which is a organization that gets sports bras and sports bra education to girls who need it. And I think that's fabulous. But yes, I'm very excited to coach. I don't know what my future of coaching will hold. I guess I have to see how much I like it, but I'm going to be coaching, assistant coaching at a high school cross country team this fall in Seattle, which should be a learning experience in itself. And I'm very excited and open to whatever comes of it.
Yeah. No one's more excited than that head coach right now. I can tell you that.
Yeah, we'll see. I have a lot to learn. I am excited because I hope that I will run into my high school coach, Brian Shapiro, at a meet, which I'll be coaching at. And that will be like a really funny full circle moment if it does happen.
Yeah. And Brian goes, he's a California legend and really well-liked and respected by a lot of people.
He's a legend now. He's a legend.
We talk often. Amazing. He's especially with the meets that he runs and the meets that I try to run and stuff like that. So, all right. When we're thinking about you as a pro and you as a runner, you are constantly trying to do PRs and then trying to get these personal bests and trying to go to a meet. When you go to a meet, when you're on the line, are you thinking things like I'm going to win this, or I'm just trying to do my very best? And I mean, like, what is the difference between you now at 27 and you, when you were at Arcadia night meet and you're 17?
Yeah. Gosh, I actually really, really remember. And it made me think of the Arcadia night meet, made me think of like Woodbridge. That was my first ever meet I ran at night. And then I was 13 years old. Funny aside, but it's really changed over time. I used to get really anxious before races, like so anxious that I would just want to step off the starting line or like think of ways in which I could like get out of the race beforehand. Even once I'd be on the starting line, I'd think of ways like I could like feign a fall and get out of it. Like that's how much I really, really struggled with it. And over time I developed a mantra, thinking about like something that would like bring my power back to me and like kind of quell anxiety. And, a big one that I like had for a couple of years that I loved was give it a go. Something that just kind of made me feel excited. And also I mentioned this earlier, but like, it took me a long time to get here, but now I choose to run. And I really feel that way. You know, when I was younger, I kind of just fell into it and really choose to run. It's an opportunity, like the fact that I still get to do this. And so I bring that like kind of attitude with me to every starting line. I don't know that I'm going to win every race. It's really actually very hard to win races as a pro. And I'm lucky that I've gotten that opportunity several times. But I just know every single time I'm going to put myself in it and give myself a shot. And whether I'm like just coming back from an injury, or I know I'm in the best shape of my life and I won a race and PR'd last week, like that's what I'm going to do every time. And so, you know, I'm going to make all the moves. And if I'm there at 200 meters to go, then great. If not, I know that I did everything I could. So it's my long-winded answer of changes over time, but it's now much more fun for me than it used to be.
You made me think about this quote by, I don't know who said it, but I think about it and I tell my athletes, like, tell yourself what you need to hear. And my athletes are always like, you want me to lie? I'm like, absolutely. Just lie to yourself that you're going to be fine because you're probably going to be more than fine.
Yeah.
I love it. I love that there's a mantra. Thank you for sharing that, because a lot of people are going to want to copy that for sure. Okay. I'm going to ask you a question that completely, you know, just a curveball. What's your favorite place to race when you're like, I can't miss this meet? Is there something like that for you guys that are pros?
Yes and no. There's so many meets every year that I love. I mean, I love going back to Stanford and racing. That's really special for me to like be back in my alma mater. I haven't done that since 2019. So I'm hoping that I get the chance at some point soon. I do love racing at Hayward Field. I know that's such a stereotypical answer, but it's like such a beautiful stadium and has so much history that that's a lot of fun. I really love meets that do a good job, like bringing fans in and making it exciting. Like this meet that I'm going to, the Sir Walter Mile in Raleigh, North Carolina, they lined thousands of people up on the track, like into lane four.
Oh, cool.
And they're like yelling at you as you're running by. And like, that's really fun for me too. So I don't know, different places for different reasons.
When you travel to Europe and different parts of the world, is there a place that you're like, oh, this is fun. I love it here. I would love to do more here. And there's places where you're like, I never want to come back here. This was awful.
I don't know if I want to throw those places under the bus, the latter part of the question, but like, yeah, there are definitely places I've been to, especially in Europe. They're so much fun. Like, there's such a different vibe for pro athletes after national championships have happened. Like, people are just less on edge, like more relaxed. Like there are a lot more, at least pre-COVID, coming back now, like post-race parties and get-togethers. And that's been a lot of fun racing in Europe, because I feel like all of the American athletes all like find each other. Like last year, I became friends with two other like very good, one's a 1500 runner and the other's an 800 runner athlete. We didn't know each other super well. And we spent like 2 weeks in Stockholm together. And then like now we're buddies every time we see each other at meets. And that was a really special place to get to go. I love Stockholm. I once raced in this little town in Italy called Rovereto, which probably has a population of like 100 people. And it was beautiful and amazing. It was this amazing professional stadium in the middle of this town that looked like it was pulled out of 1600. So it's, yeah, pretty special to get to race all around the world and see different places.
Is track looked at differently in different parts of the world? Is it a bigger deal in Europe?
Yes, it's a way bigger deal. They can pack a stadium, no problem. I mean, we were worried about world championships in Eugene, people not showing up in the stadium, not being full. And it actually, they did a really good job and it was, but the viewership even at USA's this year was so, so small. In comparison, you go to like a little meet in Europe and they pack the stadium with thousands of people who are like wanting to get autographs from athletes, and like lots of kids are really excited. I think it's just, there's so many sports in the US that, you know, people get the opportunity to watch more. So they don't see track, and also track's unfortunately really hard to watch. Like you never know if it's going to be on NBC or ESPN or Flow Track or Runner Space. It's like, how the heck's any like regular fan supposed to keep up with that? So I think that
you gotta pay for like each one individually.
Right? Yes.
And you're like trying to keep track of, like, we just bought Peacock. I didn't want Peacock, but we had to buy it just because I wanted to watch you guys run.
Yeah. So it's tough that way. And I think that track is maybe just more accessible and more popular in Europe. So it's definitely fun for athletes.
Well, Peacock is definitely not going to be a sponsor of this podcast anymore. Well, you know, I want to just kind of end with, and I promised you I'd keep it, you know, a tight 20, as close to it as possible. Did you always want to be a runner? Is this something that, I mean, were you in soccer player, softball player, basketball player? You know, there's a lot. I mean, I have a daughter and she's 10 and she's like, I'm trying to, is that something that you went to Palos Verdes your freshman year and said, this is my thing? Or did you develop that over time?
Oh no, it came over time. I mean, I knew I was a good runner when I went to high school. but I was very committed to soccer. I was like, I am a soccer player. Like, this is what I want to do. I was on a very good team. I'm like, this is what I want to do in college. Like, I already knew that when I was pretty young. My high school coaches, my track coaches disagreed with that feeling. And eventually I kind of got to like, okay, track is my path. But it probably took until very close to my senior year of high school to feel that way. Because as I mentioned before, I just had so much anxiety around racing. Like, I didn't always have as much fun as I wanted to, which I could give advice to a younger athlete, it would be to have more fun because being in high school and being on a team is awesome. I wish that that had been different, but I learned a lot over time, and the inner, you know, young kid in me that wanted to be a professional soccer player kind of turned to being a professional track athlete. So I still like to think of living my like, you know, younger self's dream.
That's fantastic. Where can people find, like, where can we follow you and see results? Where on social media can we find you? Where about your sponsor? Like, tell us more about where we can, now that we're all fans of you after 20 minutes, where can we go and find out more about you?
Yeah. So I try to post pretty regularly on Instagram. My handle is my first name, Rebecca_last name Mira. And I think it's the same handle on Twitter. I try to post regularly there as well. Also, I run for Wazelle, which is a women's athletic brand, and they make awesome clothes. And I do a lot of like different events all around the country. So hopefully if I'm coming to a city near you, you can come to one of those events, and that'd be a lot of fun way to meet.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining me. Just as like a parting gift, relaybatons.com, who's also a sponsor of this podcast, is going to send you an engraved mug just as a thank you.
Really? Well,
it's kind of like a travel mug. Yeah, it's super cool. You can put whatever you want in it, and you can be super cool, like, you know, all your friends. So I'll make sure that as soon as you're on the podcast, I get your address and we can send it to you. But this podcast is brought to you by On Track and Field. And like I just mentioned, relaybatons.com. On Track and Field and relaybatons.com are doing it right. And I'm not just saying that because they sponsor the podcast and I work essentially with them, but I'm telling you this, I wouldn't be doing this unless I believed in them. Steve, you're about to hear his voice. He's going to close us out with this podcast. He's the CEO of relaybatons.com and ontrackandfield.com. Just get a hold of him. He will take care of you. He's the best that there is in the business. And without further ado, Steve, take us away.
Thanks for listening to this week's On Track and Field podcast with guest Rebecca Mira and our host, The Triplet, Coach JT Ayers and his triceps. The On Track and Field podcast is powered by RelayBatons.com, custom engraved meat and competition legal relay batons, and home of the Louis Baton, and custom engraved water bottles and tumblers, perfect for team branding, coaches' gifts, or making staying hydrated fun and hip. And by OnTrackandField.com, your one-stop source for all things track and field and cross-country related. Whether you're an athlete, coach, parent, or weekend warrior, ontrackandfield.com has everything you need. Now you can save up to 15% when you use the word Track Talk at checkout. And make sure to follow us on our socials @OnTrack, the letter N, field @OnTrackandField on Twitter and the gram.